Thanks, Kyle. So as he briefly mentioned, I'm a hospital chaplain for BJC. Actually, I'm a hospice chaplain. I work at a 16-bed facility, what we call end-of-life facility predominantly. 85% of the people who come there to pass. I do that every day. And then as well as, starting in January, I started working with the palliative care department with Washington University at Barnes Jewish Hospital. So I do that in the mornings and the hospice house in the afternoons. Palliative care basically is what I would say some of the most difficult conversations I've had with people. This is where they have been pursuing treatment, cure, and cure is no longer possible. And so when the physicians light that fire, they tell me to go in and put that fire out. And that's what I walk into. I have some of the most profound conversations with people, and I've been shut down in the most profound ways as well. And so that's what I do every day of the week. And that experience has enabled me to work on the other end of those conversations. And the other end of those conversations are coming to a point of acceptance and a point of moving on. Except I don't like the term moving on. I always say we move forward with. We don't move on. We don't get past. We don't forget. We move forward with. Because your life experiences, your relationships, your partnerships all make up who you are. And I'm going to say that we're still connected even after death. That person is still influencing us, still a part of us, and still communicating our conversations with us. And so we are moving forward with. I'm surprised, honestly, all you hear. I think that sometimes if I want to kill a conversation, I just have to tell people I work for hospice. And people will typically walk away or they won't talk. They won't know what to say. And so one thing I wanted to do today was to be able to talk about grief and loss and trauma and pain to where Mr. Rogers says when you talk about it, it becomes less scary, less ambiguous, and more manageable. And so today we're going to have this opportunity to talk about grief, bereavement on the big scope, and reflect upon our own lives and how to journey with others in their grief. Because we all have experiences where people say the wrong things. And a lot of times people don't want to say the wrong things, so they don't say anything. And sometimes that can be just as traumatizing or just as bad. So as we move forward, we'll talk about things to say and things not to say. Understanding grief and loss. Meeting the needs of the bereaved. Objectives. So we're going to define bereavement terms. Identify beliefs associated with grief. Basically our embedded understanding, our culture, how we are raised, what we were born into, how grandma died, how mom died, is how I want to die, or how I want to be treated, or how I want to be, what I think is normal, natural, and acceptable. Identify theories related to grief, past theories and current theories, describing physical and cognitive, emotional, and spiritual reactions to grief, specific types of losses, ways to provide bereavement care, the importance and quality of support, learning the risks and factors associated with complicated grief. So we're going to define these terms throughout here. Discuss bereavement services within the community. I have, which I didn't include in here, but I have a 25-page document on just bereavement sources within the St. Louis community. There are resources out there, and so I encourage people to ask or to seek and to find them. We'll talk about that. Personal exploration. Like I said, you guys are glutton for punishment. You wanted to experience this. And so simply saying your first loss. You have that in your head? Does anybody want to share? Zoe.
My grandmother, my mom passed away 2 years ago.
2 years ago, your grandmother. Thanks for sharing. Yes.
whenever I was two or three, but I had three cats, and then they all died.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Yes, ma'am.
I lost my mom when I was 12.
Your mother when you were 12. Thank you for sharing. Yes, sir.
Loss of a child is due to childhood trauma.
Yeah?
It's very personal experience at a very young age. And I still deal with it.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Mine's more of a loss. When I was in high school, I had a brain hemorrhage.
Okay.
That resulted in a stroke.
Okay.
At a very young age.
Yeah. A lot of losses associated
yeah.
with that. Yes, ma'am.
My great aunt had 14 months or so.
Great aunt. Oh. Yes, ma'am.
I lost my very first child. I didn't get a chance to bond with him or anything. He died after 3 days. And I sometimes wonder about him now. Had he lived,
yeah.
he would be 50 years old.
50 years old.
And I just wonder, who will he be? Going.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
My first son, my oldest son, I lost, and then my third oldest one. I lost a sister in 2012, mother 2013,
yeah.
Aunt mother 2015, then another sister 2015.
Yeah. Glenny. All these experiences, both personally and corporately now, are grief. It's a weight. It's a burden. It's what we carry with us. It's what you think about when you see kids playing. It's what you go through when you see other people's cats. It's what you think about when you're going off your first day of college or getting married. These events of our life shape who we are and how we see the world. But we're going to learn today, we're going to talk about today, how your experiences are your greatest asset to helping somebody else. We're going to distinguish between sympathy, little platitude comments, and empathic comments. Sympathy says, we look down into a hole, and we say, damn, that sucks. Empathy says, we get into the hole with them, and we say, damn, this sucks. Where you're right there beside them, journeying with them. And what I say is that's the greatest story ever told. Is that God became one of us to be able to experience what it is to be human and be able to sit there right beside us when we grieve, right beside us when we cry, right beside us when we can't take our first step. That's what we're learning today, how to do that. Did you feel like you were able to talk about your grief with people? Share that? You have permission? Sometimes I think the world, American culture, has conditioned us to kind of be okay. How are you doing today? Okay. Good. Good in you. Simple statements, kind of benign, don't mean a whole lot. But it's just to kind of get through the day. But to actually have somebody who listens to you, actually have somebody who cares and says, no, seriously, I'm asking you. How are you doing? What's it like? What is a good helping relationship? To actually offer something that's practical? To actually call up when there's times when you needed a conversation the most, helping relationships. And what is the greatest asset you have to bring to a helping relationship? Toby Mac says, share your story because your story can be the keys to unlocking someone else's prison. Your greatest asset is your story. It's who you are. Your presence and your time Yes, ma'am. Did you have a question? Yes.
I do. I have a friend and that's why I'm here today.
Uh-huh. Breathe.
And her son killed someone and then he killed himself. And I'm trying to help her.
Yeah.
I don't know how.
Yeah. Well, this is a great place to be.
I'm hoping.
Yeah. And I even think just your heart to your friend says, hey, I'm trying. I'm trying. Just the ability to get up every morning says something. Yes, ma'am.
So I went through foster care as a youth and went through the loss of my family and everything. And now I'm a foster parent.
Okay.
I'm trying to help.
Wow.
3-year-old, who we've had 28 months.
Okay.
Since he was 12 months old. With his own grief and loss, because termination is supposed to happen in July. And
he's
very bonded with his older brothers. We thought we were going to get to adopt them too. But
yeah.
We have a different dad, and we're going back to him in a couple of weeks.
Oh, so, my God.
I don't know how to explain to this 3-year-old who's crying. I want my bubbies. I'm like, I know you do, honey.
Yeah.
I know you do. I know you love them. I know you miss them. If it were up to us, they'd be here.
Right.
You know, but trying to, because he's so young, he just doesn't understand. And
yeah,
I could share my story, but he's not quite old enough. But I at least can relate because I've been there.
Yeah.
You know. But.
Right. I at Evelyn's house, the hospice house that we have, we give out tokens when people pass to the family members that says, hey, this is a way to remember Evelyn's house, remember this experience, something tangible to hold. Sometimes just even that tactile is a way for coping. And I don't know, for a 3-year-old, maybe a teddy bear that is, this is, we're putting all our hopes and wishes and dreams and expectations in this teddy bear to give to you to help you have something tangible for as you go through this process. And I don't know how much connection you still have with them.
He has visits every Sunday right now, but like I said, termination's happening in July.
Yeah.
They're the dad of the older kids. Well, I would like to keep that relationship. He's not one we can work with.
I know.
Hostile. And you know, so
I'm sure the resources
keep that connection. I don't think we're going to have that option.
Yeah, and sometimes there's resources out there. I'm sure there have to be, but if not, sometimes the best thing we can do is trust that God's going to take care. Trust that God's going to make it work. That it's not all falling on your shoulders. We are a community. We're stronger together. And sometimes that means that you're not carrying the load specifically. You're praying for the people who are carrying the load. I don't know. That's heavy.
Loss doesn't always mean death. I mean, so it's hard to say, yeah, they're here, they're alive, but you can't see them.
Yeah. Yeah, yes.
Okay, I have a question, because some people have said that they think it should be a time limit on grief.
Yeah. Yep. I will address that.
Okay.
I will address that. So definitions. In grad school, I was told always define your terms. If you're going to write a paper, start with defining your terms so you know what we're talking about. Bereavement. Simply is the objective event of a loss. I was even doing research, and the etymology of the word bereave comes from the Old English, meaning that you have experienced a loss through violence. So somebody steals something from you, that's to bereave. To loss of a limb, that's bereavement. To identity, jobs, roles, those are all forms of bereavement, typically through a violent act or through death. Grief is the expression of the loss through physical, emotional, and social. Physical through health and body manifestation, psychologically through feelings, thoughts, and attitudes, and then socially through interactions with others, even in that role. So now you are a wife, and now you are termed as a widow. Or you were a parent, and now you are termed as parentless, childless. I don't like those terms. I like to say that we are always a parent. I like to say that we're always a spouse. I just like to say that sometimes that relationship is switched from a physical relationship to a spiritual relationship. And then secondary losses, losses that are consequences of the initial loss. So this happened, and now all these other consequences, these effects have happened now. That's secondary losses. And sometimes we grieve that without expressively talking about it. And mourning is the natural process you go through accepting the loss. It's the whole process. It's the whole experience. So we'll talk about timelines, or we'll talk about what that looks like. True or false? I didn't think you were going to take a quiz today, did you? All bereaved grieve in the same predictable way.
False.
False. Good job. So there's no one right way or one wrong way to grieve. That's important to note. We'll put that in our store bank. Healing from grief involves getting over the loss, generally takes a year.
False.
Yeah. So it's not like the flu. Everyone is unique. There is no time limit. I would say even the pinnacle of grief is that year mark, that day that it happened, a year ago. That whole first year, we call it the year first. Your first holiday without your loved one. Your first 4th of July without burning yourself with fireworks. Your first anniversary, birthdays, are all significant moments. And if you're not prepared for it, it's going to hit you in the face. Another thing I think the American culture has done poorly is the fact that, I'm not very good at math, but 100% of people are going to die. It's going to happen. And I think knowing that helps us prepare for that. I think a lot of times at the hospital when I'm telling people, journeying with them on this journey, people are shocked. They're always surprised. They're always surprised that they're not going to get better, that this illness is going to take over them. It's like they were duped into believing that healthcare has come a long way, but it hasn't come all the way. They're surprised by that. So death is seen as they're being cheated. They're having something taken from them. And so we don't prepare for it. People know it's not going to happen to me. And so when it does happen, you're not prepared for it. So I think being able to talk about it helps prepare. It's better not to think or talk about the pain. False. In talking about it, you are coming more into the room. Yes?
Whenever you talk to me about it, like, it can get some stress off your chest. Like,
yeah.
If you hold stuff in too long,
yep.
Like, no one else knows about it, you don't share your pain with anyone,
yeah.
It'll end up hurting you more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You bring yourself more fully into the room, is what I like to say. I've heard it said that a burden shared is half the burden, and a joy shared is twice the joy. And so through talking about it with key people helps alleviate the pain of it. The intensity or length of your grief reflects how much you love the deceased. False. Yeah, once again, goes back to secondary losses. Sometimes people will say, oh, well, you were the spouse. No, excuse me. You were the sibling. You were the sibling. You were, so you didn't have a choice. I was their best friend, so I had a choice to be with them. So it hurts more me than it does for you. Because I chose to be in that relationship. No. Or secondary loss of, not secondary loss, where you are, it was your cat. So it's just a cat. No big deal. No, it is a big deal. It's significant. And so to acknowledge that and to be able to talk about that shows the value of that relationship. In the past, so grief was said to be in predictable stages or tasks. Involved avoidance of shock, then confronting pain, reality, then adaptation, and moving on with your life. Kubler-Ross, that's the stages of grief where you have what I always say, I don't believe my dad always buys depressed animals. So first stage is denial. Deny that it happened. Mom didn't die. Didn't happen. Then the next is bartering. Okay, so mom didn't die. I'm going to go to the grave every day. She didn't die. Or always buys bartering. Did I already do bartering? Dad always buys angry. Not angry. I apologize right now. I am totally drawing a blank. Depressed. Depression. So you go into a moment where you can't see color. Go into a moment where you lack energy. It's a stage of grief. Stage of grief of depression. Dad always buys depressed animals. Anger, yes, thank you. Anger. So people get angry. They strike out or they retaliate in different ways to manage their emotions or stress. Thanks, ladies. More recently, so viewed grief as less rigidly defined and more individuated and more unpredictable. Meaning these stages of grief that people still go through, they just don't go through it as in one, two, three consecutive. They more go through it as in weaving in and out. Or like a spiral. You're still tapping, you're still touching these emotions, these feelings, these stages. And then as you're progressing forward, you start to, like say, scab or start to heal over, but that grief is still there, like a pond or a well. It's still, you still dip into at moments when a trigger happens or an event happens. You'll still dip down into that pain.
Sir?
Yes, ma'am.
I don't remember the whole time, but we lost our son about 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And the palm mentioned a half-stitched scar.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like that.
Yeah.
Because
the mark is still there. You can still see it.
And the stitch comes open sometimes when you least expect it.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're not aware of it, it can come out when you least expect it and in inappropriate or uncontrollable ways. So the experiences of grief, physical, cognitive, emotional, social, and spiritual. I have a better slide for each one of these, but I like this slide. Physical experience, people have dizziness, tightness of chest, lowered immunity, inactivity, or even hyperactivity. When I would come home and the house would be completely clean, I knew my mother was upset about something. Probably something we did. Cognitive. People, memory gaps, even inability to recall things can be a sign of grief or expression of grief. Odd dreams. Have people ever talked about dreams? Have you ever had dreams that were odd where that person was with you again?
We lost my dad in November.
Okay.
And my daughter called me one day, and she was not crying, but she just said, "Mom, I just have to tell you, I had the weirdest dream."
Yeah.
She said, "Poppy was right over me, and I could smell him." And
wow.
And she said, "I know I was sleeping. I'm sure I was sleeping, but she said he was so real, and he told me that everything was going to be okay." And then he left. And he didn't limp, didn't have his walker. And, I mean, she really saw him whole again, the way she remembered him as a young child. And I told her that that point, that that was a gift from the Lord.
Aww.
To see that he was okay now. And then in heaven, he's whole.
Wow.
she's not quite a believer, living the life.
Uh-huh.
So I'm excited that God gave that to her.
Experience.
Yeah.
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 You're absolutely right. And you're reframing that experience. Social experience, take on the roles or tasks of the deceased, having difficulty being with others, feeling jealous of others for their happiness, what they have and that you don't, coping with changes to relationships, striking up a new identity now, embarrassed about not being there yet. How many times have I talked to people and they say, it's been 3 months, but I still can't stop crying. What's wrong with me? It's been 6 months now, and I still can't stop thinking about Dad. So, there's shame, guilt.
There's some days that I still think about my mom and Dad.
Yeah.
And sometimes it really hits me.
Yeah.
I mean, most times it's good thoughts and all the good
uh-huh.
times that we had. But there are times when I just miss them so much, and I guess I just have to let it out some way, so here comes a tear.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a great point. Is grief is not just sadness. It's not just anger. It's also the good memories. Mm-hmm. It's all the joy. It's all the positive events that happened. Those things you want to hold to.
Yeah.
Spiritual experiences, defining what meaning is, redefining relationships, confidence in acquiring new skills, rekindle old relationships, take on new hobbies, interests, making future plans. So we had, you know, we were going to go retire and we were going to go travel the world. And then this happened. And now we can't do that. So making new plans is a way of coping. Am I in your guys' way over here? Can you see it?
I mean, yes, but you're fine.
All right. Specific types of losses. So these are simply like just relationships, losses, quickly defined, spouse, partner. Men tend to be more instrumental, women more. I don't like those particularly, but it's a good way to just look at it. So I think of it in ways of like being active. So like a gentleman is crying or grieving, offering suggestions for doing something, such as going on a walk, getting a drink of water, helping out this person bring in this item or this thing over here. Sometimes it's helpful to help journey with them on that journey as an instrumental griever. Women can be more expressive. Typically in my small groups that I host, women can usually be the more talkers. We'll talk more and be more articulate about their feelings or experiences. This is overgeneralization, I know, and I break that mold completely. But in typical, in teaching it, and the length of the relationship, like we said earlier, does not affect. Adult loss of a parent, most common form of bereavement, the feeling of being orphaned again, or not again, a orphan, and then the question of mortality. I'm next in line after my parents die. Who's next in the family tree to go? It would be me. A loss of a sibling. This is the most neglected loss. Loss of connection to the past. That person that you grew up with, all those family histories of stories are now gone. And any unresolved issues. Loss of the child. One of the hardest losses. There's so many anger, guilt, separation, search of meaning, identity, responsibility. A lot of times parents take on that responsibility that it's my fault, or I should have done something, or I could have prevented this. Identity, parent. I think the statistics is really high for if a couple loses a child, of whether they stay together or not. Once again, yeah, it's blame, it's guilt, it's the pain, how to function, cope together through this.
Our son committed suicide.
Yes.
Clear across the country. And we were very close, so I knew within me something was wrong. But as a Christian, the hardest thing for me was to know where he was.
Yeah.
Because I didn't really know. But about a year ago, I was playing the piano at church, and God just kind of gave me a vision.
Yeah.
Of Sam being in heaven.
Wow.
And it was
very calming.
Yeah.
Very assuring.
Because even though people would say, you know, he's in heaven, I didn't know.
Right. Wow. Yeah, that's a profound experience. And even say miscarriage or stillborns or newborn deaths are all traumatic losses. And sometimes miscarriages or stillborns are the unspoken griefs. So living with grief, how do we do it? How do we live with this pain, this experience? Well, I think that community helps. Having other people to journey with who care. People you can express your feelings with. You can be vulnerable. You can be transparent. Taking care of yourself. Sleeping at night. Eating a healthy meal. Drinking water. Accept that life is for the living. Be able to move through it. Do more. Not just stay back in your house, but get out. Just do the things that make you spark joy. Was that spark joy? Thank you. You postpone major life changes. So if your wife just passed, you don't have to go sell your house now. You don't have to move to the other side of the country. You don't have to buy a Cadillac. You can exist. You don't have to make a lot of changes. And be patient. And seek outside help when necessary. Be courageous enough to say that I can't do this on my own. I need some other people. I need something with professional help. Medication at times is a way to give you that resource or that ability to manage or cope within the moment. The brain is like any other ill organ. You take heart medication when your heart's not working. You take antibiotics when you have infections. And sometimes you need medication for your chemical balances in your brain. Provide an environment that allows encouraging individuals expression of grief. So this is how we are learning to journey with other people. How we are going to acknowledge... There's a pointer. Acknowledge that there is... That people need other people and they need a space to be able to grieve. So one way we're going to support people is by providing an environment that allows, encourages individuals to express their own grief. Sometimes that's providing a group, a support group, or being able to participate in a support group. Or that's calling up for a cup of coffee. Or that's saying that I'm acknowledging the fact that you have had a loss and it matters to me. Your loss affects me. Mourners can be affirmed that they are not weak or crazy, but rather typical. I guess sometimes we have to be told that we're not crazy, that we're not abnormal, that we are normal, that this is okay. Do not take away or grieve or negate the pain. I think this is one of the worst things people do for people. When they're trying to be helpful, is they say, no, you don't have to feel that way, or you don't have to hurt, or I think sometimes the point is that we hurt. The point is that this is so painful. That pain reminds us of the relationship that we had, the importance of that relationship, and the lost separation of that relationship. And the pain also allows us to experience the good. You have no idea what the mountaintop is without having been through the valley. The mountaintop is only as good as the valley is deep. So don't offer false comfort. Don't say things like it's going to be okay or it's going to... Because you don't know. Sometimes don't saying that, oh, he's in heaven is not helpful. Because it's not... You don't know. I know personally, but to another person, I can't express my personal experience. Journey with them as they navigate their own grief path, saying, "You're not alone. I'm right here with you." Offering practical help. That's huge. A single mom? Yeah, let me just have your kids for a night. Or, oh, I know you got these other things going on. Let me help you make a meal. Let me help you clean your house. How about, oh, you have to go get this paper product for your son's elementary school project? Oh, I can do that. Practical things that are actually in their life going to make, allow the mother, allow the person to grieve. What I say about Evelyn's house is the patient is so taken care of by the nurses and the staff and the support that the family can do the real work of bereavement, of grief, because they're no longer having to care. They're able to care for themselves. And so allowing other people to be able to care for themselves is huge on helping them bereave. And the best way to do this all is by actively listening, attentively listening. So saying that we know that their school has a project coming up, and so we're listening to the fact that, oh, so I can help them this way. Or to know that they are still grieving, that they're still in a lot of pain. And active listening helps us do that. So how do we active listening? We silently listen to someone. It's difficult. I know it's not easy. When a person is crying and wailing and weeping and grasping, to sit with them can be some of the most painful times of your own experience. But don't distract them. Don't interrupt them. Don't change the subject. Just wait till they are more calm. What I say in the hospital is wait till you hear that sigh. People will sigh because it takes a lot of energy to cry. It takes a lot of energy to get this emotion out. And after they have gotten it out, expanded their energy, there will be a sigh. People go, and in that moment, I just say, I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. I'm here. These people are doing these things. You can just be. It takes a long time, as much time as you need. Allow me to make a phone call for you. Allow me to get you a cup of water. Don't give advice. Don't quiz for details or judgmental. Your experience is your experience, and I'm going to let you have that. I'm not going to mine for details or information. It'll come out. What people are most concerned with and most distracted by will come out. What I always say, when a crisis happens, it's when people's meaning and purpose kind of percolate to the top. And that's what you're meeting them at, in those needs. So once again, one culture is different from another culture. Who I am is different from who you are. So my beliefs, my values can differ from what you are and your relationships, and so I'm not going to impose upon what I think is right or wrong or acceptable. I'm going to accept where you're at. And allow science, attending to nonverbal communication. So a person might be standing. I will try to find them a chair so they don't fall and hurt themselves. Or a person will be rocking, self-soothing, and I will maybe even offer them a blanket or offer them to change the temperature in the room, try to provide an environment where it's a soothing, comforting environment. Crying, tissues, water, all tending to primary needs for a person so that they don't have to do it themselves. Underlying content feelings. Look for the main ideas of the speaker. The concepts that keep coming up. Somehow they're connected. There's a reason why people are saying what they're saying. And sometimes by able to identify the theme of what they're talking about helps address what their primary concern is, what they need. One time I was talking to a gentleman who was 99 years old and his wife was 99. And he was telling me about, he lived along the river, the Kankakee River, and he saved 4 people out of that river. And he explained these details, these events in detail of how he saved these people. This happened and this, and he got them out and I was soaking wet, and then the police came, and then, you know, all these different events. And the theme of what he was talking about was rescuing people. He was able to rescue these people out of this river, out of his own strength, and his wife is dying in the bed next to him. He's not able to rescue her. So he was telling me that without telling me that, by identifying the themes of what he was talking about. And so through just listening to him, I was able to bring it back around to the room with where we were at and have him be able to talk about his relationship with his wife. Talk about her. Bring her into the room. So when we listen, we nod our head, we're pausing, we're saying, uh-huh, we're engaging to the other person to let them know that we are listening, that we are here, fully present. Paraphrasing what people are saying sometimes. You say this, I hear you saying this. It sounds like you really loved your wife. Asking for clarification. I hear is this. Is that right? Am I correct? Is that what you're feeling right now? What to say to the bereaved? I think of it like this. When we are in a conversation with somebody, the light is going to be either focused on me or the light is going to be focused on the other person. And depending upon the relationship and how that relationship, the roles of the relationship, determines where that light's going to be pointing. And so by asking questions about them, open-ended questions, allows that light to be pointed on them. And it's uncomfortable at times because we're not used to talking about ourselves. I was just talking the other day about, I was with a social worker, and I said, social workers are friends. They can like talk, they can communicate, they can share life. Chaplains aren't friends. We don't get along. And she was like, why is that? Because chaplains are such great talkers. And I was like, no, we're really good listeners. So you put two chaplains together, we don't know what to do with each other. Because we're all the time constantly trying to fight this light. Who's it going to shine on? And so we're not very good friends. So these questions, how, what to say to a brief, how are you doing? You focus on what they're up to. I've been thinking about you. I was sorry to learn that he died. You're grieving just the right way for you. You're okay. It's okay for you to grieve, to cry, to be angry, to regret, to have guilt. I get it. You must have loved him. They are fortunate to be with you. This is what I remember. Recounting, reminiscing about those good events. What do you think he or she wants you to remember about her? What do those things speak for them? Sometimes one of the greatest questions I ask people is, if they could talk right now, what do you think they would say? Oh, Dad, he was a jokester. He'd be making us all laugh. Or he'd say, I wouldn't want a chaplain in here, I wouldn't get him.
Question on that one part where it says it's okay for you to cry and be angry. My grandfather, he passed away May 4th, and my grandma had a lot of bitterness and a lot of anger, especially towards God.
Yeah.
And so how do you approach that?
Yeah.
It was lung cancer.
Yep.
My grandpa's life. So how do you help somebody who's angry towards God?
And that God? Anger question, yes. You know what I say? I always say that God is bigger than our questions, than our anger, than our sadness, God can take it. And I say that God is angry with us. God doesn't want your dad to die. God doesn't want your grandfather to die. That wasn't the intended order. But that is the consequence of where we live. So God grieves with us, alongside of us. And once again, that pain of that loss helps the joy of the having and what we're saved for be so much more sweet. And a lot of times I just tell people, I'm sorry. You know, I'm sorry that this happened. Cancer is a terrible, horrible thing. And I wish it wasn't so, but it is. I kind of just try to join people in that. God's bigger than it. Yeah, do you have a question?
Yeah, kind of building on what he said, what about a lapse in faith that is caused by anger at God?
Yeah. So I preached a little while ago, and I told the congregation that sometimes it's hard for me to come through the doors of church. I'm a chaplain. I'm an ordained minister. But it's still difficult for me to walk across that threshold and sit in the pews. Because I, as a chaplain, there's a lot of grief that I deal with, a lot of pain, a lot of tragedy that I deal with. And I have sometimes a difficult time reconciling that, processing it under, and holding it. And but I know God's holding me, God's taking care of me, and that's one of the reasons why I do go to church, to be reminded of that. I tell my congregants that they are enabling me to go to heaven, and so I need them, because without them I don't think I'd make it. And so a lapse in faith or a lapse in a relationship with God is part of people's journey. It's part of what makes them who they are and allows them to have a fuller experience of what it means to be human. It's difficult. Life is difficult without God. I have a relationship with God. But sometimes it takes people to have that real experience to understand that. I can tell you all day long how more joyful, more a better person I am because of God. But until you experience yourself, that relationship, you won't fully understand. So I told one of my coworkers, just be patient. I got two brothers who are atheist, and I had great conversations with them. And I'm not trying to get them to go believe or think one way or the other. I just journey with them, and I just tell my parents just to be patient. And hopefully it won't take a tragedy to bring them back to the faith. But maybe it will. I don't know. Did I answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
You.
Any other questions? No? Yes, yes.
Well, I mean, to add to what they were saying, I've had that question come up a lot, you know, and, you know, I say, you know, I don't think God causes bad things to happen. I think he's there to walk with us when uh-huh. we do, and that he has a way of turning bad to good.
Okay.
You know, like I said, I went through foster care. I went through years of infertility.
Oh, my goodness.
But miscarried and never could get pregnant again. That was a tremendous amount of grief in what you were talking about, the baby. You know, people were asking me, well, how far along were you? Well, I was only like 6 weeks. Didn't change the pain. Didn't change the grief. But all of that transpired to bring about me being a foster parent and being able to care for more kids. And I don't think God caused those bad things to happen. But he,
utilizing them.
Use them to help me to relate to kids in need and to be there when if I had my own kids, I may not have been able, you know, maybe have done that. So I think, and like, you know, forgive me, I don't mean to,
But there's another woman I know who, you know, helps with the foster closet in Illinois whose son committed suicide a year ago.
Oh.
She has been tremendously transparent about everything she's doing, everything she's going through, and doing everything she can to prevent more suicides for young people. Again, I don't think God ever caused that to happen, but to take that pain to try to prevent it from happening to someone else.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a way, you know, to
use the experience. Share experiences. Turning obstacles into opportunities. Yeah. What not to say. I'm sure you've heard these. It's God's will. Don't think about it. Be strong. Basically, you're trying to tell others how they should be. And you shouldn't tell others how they should be. Be thankful you have other children.
I heard that one.
Yeah, my goodness.
Okay.
It totally negates the life that you lost. It was time. It would have been worse if... Yeah. Providing phone support. Practical way of helping somebody. Especially somebody who's not next to you, close to you in your congregation. Simply, hello. This is... I'm calling to find out how you're doing since the death of your loved one. Simply open-ended, calling just to check on you. These words, tones that convey concern... Non-invasive questions stimulate sharing. Be okay if they don't want to talk. Just reinforcing that you're not alone. I still care about you. I still think about you. I still hope the best for you. And then say there are supports out there, things you can do. Assisting. You're just allowing permission. You're saying, it's okay. I'm right here with you. Review details. Sometimes asking, what was the death like? What was the funeral like? Ways to kind of talk about it in simple terms, in experiential terms, to get to being able to talk about emotions or feelings beyond what has been happening. Sometimes talking about other events, other losses, helps people reinforce their own coping mechanism, their own strategies of giving, dealing, and coping. This event happened here. How did you get through it? What happened? How was that like? Okay, so you're building encouragement, affirming, staying connected, asking opening questions. What do you remember? What do you want them to remember? Tell them it's normal to feel. Sometimes I call it the waves. Those waves of emotion will come. You said you still have those waves. And sometimes the best way is to learn how to ride those waves or accept those waves. Say, I know this is a feeling, it's coming. I know that it's sad. I know I'm angry. I know it's... And learning how to ride those waves versus ignoring it and fighting and denying those waves and then getting beat up. Encourage them to take day at a time, small goals. Be patient. Take extra care. You know what? If you need to buy that Snickers bar at that grocery store line, you know what? That's okay. Just, you know, you got to do you. I really like this poem. Don't tell me that you understand. Don't tell me that you know. Don't tell me that I will survive or how I will surely grow. Don't tell me that it is just a test. That I'm truly blessed, that I am chosen for this task, apart from all the rest. Don't come at me with answers, that I can only come from me. Don't tell me how my grief will pass, that I will soon be free. Don't stand in pious judgment of the bounds I must untie. Don't tell me how to suffer, and don't tell me how to cry. My life is filled with selfishness, my pain is all I see, but I need you now. I need your love unconditionally. Accept me in my ups and downs. I need someone to share. Just hold my hand and let me cry and say, my friend, I care. Yeah. Don't tell me how to be, but don't leave me alone. support from others. Focusing on support systems can be extremely important to adjusting loss. So acknowledging family, acknowledging church, acknowledging community resources. Talk with people who are good listeners. Nurture memories of the deceased. Reach out for help, professional help if needed. Remind the person that they don't have to protect others. They don't have to provide support to others in this time. Set limits. Tell them how to feel and what to do. Like, you can help police other people. You can say, okay, I've had enough. I can only do so much. I'm an introvert and I get drained by people, so please give me some space. Or vice versa, like me, I'm energized by people and so I need others. Reassure them it's okay to say no. Thank you for offering this, but I can't deal with that right now. Or I don't want another crappy casserole. Support groups. Support groups I've found as one of the most rewarding things that I do in my job. I find that it's immediate change. People come in to the group, and then an hour later, they are a completely different person. They have formed a community or a connection with somebody else, and sometimes it is the most rich relationships that I have the privilege of being involved in. These people who are not bound by family, geography, they're only bound by the same experience of losing somebody. And because of that experience, they're able to connect on the other levels and able to support one another outside of this 1 hour. I was just privileged with believe it or not, yesterday, a lady texted me who was in my previous group when I was up in South Chicago and said, one of the ladies, it's her 3-year anniversary, and she told that they still do the support group. She told the group that if it wasn't for this group, I would not be here. If it wasn't for Hamish giving me that call and sitting with me, I wouldn't be here. This lady called my office and said, I need help. I need somebody. So my administrator gave me the call. So I called her back and said, hey, I'm in the area. You mind if I stop by? No, you don't need to. It's okay. I'm right here. Let me just stop by. I'll come by. Okay. All right. So I come by. She lets me in. We sit at her kitchen table and she just cries. And cries, and she says, I don't know why you're here. It's okay. I'm all right. You don't have to take care of me. And she cries, and she cries, and she says, this isn't helping. This isn't helping. I said, okay, it's okay. I'm in no rush. I have all day. It's okay. Cries, tells her husband a little bit, cries, this isn't helping. You should just go. All right. It's okay. I'm just here to be with you. No, and then she cries, talks about her husband. She's just weaving in and out. And all of a sudden she sighs, does this sigh. And I just say, you know, thank you for letting me be here with you. I have a support group that we meet the first and third Thursdays of the month. Here at this time, we'd love to have you. I'm going to be giving you a call in a week. So I leave. She shows up to that group. And says, I don't know why I'm here, but I'm here, you know. And so I just gave her the space, connected with these other ladies. And 3 years later, she's still saying, thanks for sitting with me. Thanks for inviting me. Thanks for just being there. I didn't do anything other than just presence. Anything other than just saying I'm here. I've got nowhere else to be right now. And then she says that saved her life. Now, I'm glad she told me that now, not back then, because that's a weight to bear. But it's to acknowledge the fact that giving somebody else your time, giving somebody else your presence, can save their life. And support groups can do that. So you're helping people learn to cope by joining with others. No rights or time to join, but it's generally within 3 months of loss. 3-month mark, people are usually like, okay, now the activities of doing, and now this reality is starting to settle in. And I'm starting to realize that I am alone, and my identity is in crisis, and I am in need of more, some help. So support groups are a way to join that. Individual counseling. So support groups is great. Individual counseling is also great. The ability to process all of your losses in light of this current loss is important. That's what personal counseling is for. And I often tell people that as well. Like, we are a support group for bereavement of your recent death and compounding deaths. But your whole life process, your whole story, you're going to need somebody else that's individualized that's going to be able to process that with you. So I encourage people, both support groups, as well as professional help. Complicated grief. This is when people are having difficulties. What time do we go till? Now? Whew. Okay, well, I apologize. We went longer. I thought it was like 2:45. My bad. Complicated grief is just basically you're acknowledging that grief is compounding. It's not just one event. It's all these events compounding with other events. Yes. I appreciate you guys coming today.